tshuva and the nature of tshuva, right? So we saw that he acknowledged that he was deserving of an onesh for his chet with Batsheva that he did willingly. However, he asked Hashem through tshuva to grant him a chila so that that punishment that he deserved, that he recognized that he deserved, would be alleviated. And we see that as a result of this tshuva, through the vidoy, through the acknowledgement of his sins, through his desire to teach the masses how to do proper teshuva and restore LaHashem, right? Just restore his relationship that he had broken with Hashem. We see him somewhat successfully achieving kapara and thereby alleviating to an extent the onesh that Natan had originally said he would get. So that led us to the last question that we ended with last class to ask, so does that mean that there is a universal power of tshuva? If you do tshuva after you've sinned willfully, if you do tshuva willfully, does that automatically achieve kapara? Is everyone able to do tshuva and is everyone able to be granted kapara? So we discussed that the one most blatant contradiction to that idea was another ruler in biblical times, right, Paro, who seemed to have been denied, based on the psukim in Shemot, the ability to do tshuva or the success of kapara. So I asked you at the end of last class to look through the psukim, or the prakim really, of Shemot, where this is being described, so that through your analysis of the pshat, you would be able to get some understanding or come up with some approach as to how we can reconcile this with what we saw Rambam said in Hilchos Tshuva, right? Rambam, if you remember, at the end of last class, said that just like you sin willfully, so too do you have the opportunity to do tshuva willfully out of your own free will. But the whole Paro episode in Shemot seems to contradict that. So what were some of the issues that you came up with from Shemot, and what were the seemingly blatant contradictions with Rambam initially said in Perek Vav of Hilchos Tshuva, and how, based on your reading, based on your analysis of the pshat, how are you able to reconcile or deal with this problem? Again, this is probably one of the most complex problems philosophically in Tanakh. So let's hear, number one, what were the contradictions? What did you see from your analysis of the pshat? What were the contradictions to this? What was the progression of the tshuva, or lack thereof, process in Shemot, as described throughout the Prakim? And how did you read, how do you understand this to reconcile it with Rambam's statement that we mentioned, that everyone, if you sin willfully, just as you sin willfully, you have the ability to do tshuva willfully as well. Yes?
Okay, so to begin with, like, you started in Perek Gimel, and like right away when Hashem was even giving the instructions to Moshe, he says to him, and like,
okay.
Like, right off the bat, Hashem's like, Moshe, don't worry, like, when you go to the power, he's going to say. And then Hashem even confines in Moshe later on, like, and like the next pasuk that like Bishalav to Beitzi that like he wants, I'm don't worry, I'm gonna do all these makod and all these nitzlaod and like that's how you guys are gonna come out.
Okay, so that begs a lot of questions. Number one, why make Moshe go through the motions if he's already told him what the outcome is going to be, right? Certainly Hashem could have destroyed Paro and let Bnei Yisrael go free, right? Why the exchange, the constant exchange between Moshe and Paro as directed by Hashem, if Hashem already has let Moshe know prior to the whole engagement what the outcome is going to be. Okay? Any other issues, any other questions, also in terms of the language, what did you see throughout the process? Yeah?
Well, it's interesting that here, like when he's first telling Moshe, it's more like, I know that Paro's not going to let you go, as opposed to later on, where it's more like Hashem is hardening.
Okay, so what, in terms of the language that's used throughout the process of the Makot, what did you see was the shift? Where was the shift? What was the difference in terms of the lashon that's used?
I don't remember exactly where the shift is, but it definitely...
By the sixth Makot.
Right, it gets to like...
So what did it say before, and what does it say now? This becomes important according to one of the approaches that we're going to see to reconcile the problem. Yeah, what was the...
So in...
He uses a variation, but the language is basically very similar.
Zion, Hashem says that in Paro, Hashem starts off by saying, I'm going to be doing this.
Okay.
Then, like, the... I mean, I just kind of just wrote down all the
okay.
pieces that I found.
What had it said before that?
What?
Okay.
And then... And then, like, the first few makos, it's like,
okay, so for the first five or six makot.
Yeah, it's not so clear, like, if it's talking about paro himself or Hashem. It could be Hashem.
Okay, but it says paro hechbeded libo.
Hashem did it in the
paro. Right.
And then by shchein, it says, vechazek Hashem libo paro, and from there on, it's more clear.
Okay, so prior to shchein, in the earlier makot, even if it is somewhat nebulous in some instances, there are a number of times where it actually expels out paro hechbed et libo, paro hardened his own heart. And then we see a shift after the sixth makah when it says Hashem hekshet et lev paro or anir chazek et lev paro, something like that. So we see a shift of paro hardening his own heart in the first several makot to Hashem actually doing the hardening explicitly in the latter half of the makot. Yeah.
So, just for like more of an understanding, when you read, when the Rambam says like everyone can willfully do tshuva, does that mean like unlimited, like for their entire lives, or is it like a specific amount of time?
Okay, so again, this is like free will is a major philosophical question in general, and the two ends of the spectrums are determinism, which basically says God determines everything, and some, you know, philosophers will say that that means that every leaf that falls is determined by God. That's on one end of the spectrum. Libertarianism is on the other end of the spectrum, which basically says man has complete free will. God created man with the capacity to have complete free will, and God doesn't intervene in order to deprive one of free will. Within that spectrum is what's known as compatibilism, which somewhat explains in different variations that God is omnipotent, yet man attains or maintains his free will. So we're going to see Rambam in the rest of the halachot that I'm going to ask you to look at seems to acknowledge in a libertarian stance from what we said last class, right? And in the beginning, in the first two of the halachot, he seems to maintain that man has free will. However, he says when it comes to tshuva, there are limitations, and he seems to imply, based on his reading or his analysis of V'chazek Hashem et lev paro, that there are situations where free will could be prevented, or the opportunity to do tshuva, but I want you to look at it inside. Okay, so we got the basic ideas of what is the complexity in Shemot. So now I want you to look at two or maybe even three different approaches in terms of how to reconcile the seeming contradiction between what Rambam had said and what David seems to be describing in terms of the power and the nature of tshuva with what we see in the Paro episode in Shemot. Before we do that, does anyone have any of their own reconciliations of how to approach the pshat in light of these seeming contradictions? Okay, so we'll look at three basic approaches. Number one, we'll look at Rambam. If you're familiar with Rambam, we'll do that together, okay? So we'll look at Rambam first. Rambam talks about this issue specifically with regard to Paro, both in Hilchos Tshuva, with what we started with last class in Perek Vav, as well as in the Shemona Prakim. I didn't give you the Shemona Prakim because he talks about it from a different vantage point, but he makes a lot of the same points. So I'd rather you just look at it in the Hilchos Tshuva so that we have a more confined text. And then I also want to look at Rav Yosef Albo. If you're not familiar with Rav Yosef Albo, he is a late medieval Jewish philosopher. If you're a historian, he was one of the kind of defense attorneys in the Tortosa disputation, right? In the end of medieval Jewish philosophy, in the end of the medieval period, there were a lot, after the attacks in 1391, there were a lot of disputations where the Christians tried to attack Judaism and try to coerce Jews to convert by showing the illegitimacy of Judaism. So usually it was started by an apostate. The Tortosa disputation is the third of the disputations, right? There was the one in Paris and then one in Barcelona. But the Tortosa disputation happened in the early 1400s prior to the expulsion from Spain. So it's during the Inquisition. So Rav Albo was a Jewish philosopher who kind of was a defense attorney against the church in this disputation, trying to defend Judaism so that the masses of Jews would feel confident in their Jewish identity and be able to dispel the attacks of the Christians. So that was his historical role. He also is a Jewish philosopher. He wrote the Sefer HaIkarim also to kind of defend the Karim of Judaism, to give the Jews a confidence in their Jewish identity and to make them more fluent in their beliefs so that they were able to combat the attacks of the Christians. So he uses a lot of exegesis in order to further or support his philosophical views. Okay, so I want you to first look at Rambam to get his approach. If you're already familiar with it, just go through the halachot, because he specifically does quote David, and I want you to be able to understand what David is saying in these Mornan Aleph from Rambam's conception. And also, after that, I'll have you look at Rav Albo, and I want you to be able to contrast their views. Nechama Leibowitz also talks about Rambam's approach, but talks about it in a bit of a different way. I kind of consider her approach like a third approach, an alternative approach. So I'll give you that one as well, and you can kind of distinguish between them and decide what you feel is most cogent, okay? So right now, just go through the rest of Rambam. If you look in the first two halachot, this is what we did last class. I had it on the board just because I didn't have a sheet for you. But if you look at halacha Aleph, I quoted there yesterday from the third line. Okay, so in the middle of the third line, we talked about it last class. Bizman she'adam achad o anshei medina chotim ve'oseh hachotei chet, she'oseh mida'ato v'rsono, kamo she'adan ro'oi leifra mimenu, v'hakadosh baruch hu yodea ech yifra. Right, so it says that if somebody, an individual or the masses, and we see it wasn't just Paro, but he encouraged all of his masses to participate in the oppression of the Jews, if somebody sins, and he sins out of his own free will, mida'ato v'rsono, consciously and willingly, then it's appropriate for Hashem to punish him, and Hashem knows how to punish him, okay? And there's a lot of different punishments that Hashem justifiably will give man depending on his sin, okay? And then, when is man punished? If you look at Halacha Bet, b'meh dvarim amurim, b'zman shelo asa tshuva, right? So when is it justified for man to be punished? When he sins? Only if he doesn't do tshuva. Aval Rambam says, im asa tshuva ha-tshuva ketris mitneh ha-paranuz, וכשם שאדם חותם מדעתו וברצונו, כך הוא עושה תשובה מדעתו וברצונו. Okay, so, but Rambam says, in the libertarian stance that we mentioned last class, but if he does tshuva, the tshuva kind of serves as a shield or alleviates the punishment, because just like man sinned מדעתו וברצונו, כך הוא עושה תשובה מדעתו וברצונו. Just like man was afforded the opportunity to sin out of his own free will consciously, so too is he afforded the opportunity to do tshuva consciously and willfully. Okay, so that seems to imply on kind of objective and universal terms. However, in the very next halacha, he explains the limitations. He qualifies that statement by explaining that there are parameters to this ability or opportunity to do tshuva that we saw David is able to take advantage of, but not necessarily true of all chotim. Okay, so look at halacha gimel dalet and hey, get Rambam's approach down, and then I'll give you Rav Albo because he serves as a strong contrast. Okay? So b'chavrut now.
Oh, I mean, it's fine.